Hello and welcome to the Browns Blitz. Today is Tuesday, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, and this is episode number 50. I'm your host, Rod Bloom, and I'm very happy to be joined by my friend, Peter Jones. Peter, how are things going for you?
I'm doing well, Rod. I'm putting on too much weight, sitting on the couch eating junk, but other than that, no, I'm doing really good. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've talked, and I'll admit I think I've put on some weight too. I have not been jumping on the scale, I can tell you that much. I've been eating a little bit too good. I've not been exercising quite as much as I should, and yeah, just staying in the house more. I've gotten outside a little bit to work in the yard recently. You know, and my wife and I take some walks and stuff. I'm doing a little bit of work around the house here and there, but I'm just sitting around a little too much and I'm eating a little bit too much.
Yeah, me too. I think I was a wide receiver before this lockdown started, and now I think I'm probably an offensive left tackle, I think I am now.
I think you're not alone there. I think what were they talking about, the COVID 15 or something like that? So I don't know. I think that number is probably going to continue to rise as the lockdown goes on.
Yeah.
Well, we've had a few things go on since we've last talked. Actually, it's been a few months since you've been on the podcast, and we're not going to go back and go over everything, but I first of all wanted to just get your thoughts overall, because I had a real good talk with Chad Patterson last week on the podcast about the Browns and the draft. We broke down a lot of stuff, but you take a lot of time in preparing for the draft. You put out a guide on the draft, so this is something you take pretty seriously. So really wanted to get your thoughts on the Browns draft, kind of, maybe however you want to look at it, just as a whole, maybe, what picks you like the best and the worst, I'll just kind of turn it over to you and kind of let you give me some of your views on the Browns draft here for a bit.
Sure. You're right. Yeah. So you're right. I mean, I find the draft is one of the most exciting days or 3 days of the year for me. And I think for lots of fans of different teams, I think it's just that you always go into the draft with hope, with a hope and expectation that this is the year that you're going to find that, whether it's in the first round or you're going to find a nugget later on in the draft, but it's hope and expectation. But yeah, if I look at the Browns draft, taking it as a whole, right? So for me, the Browns was one of the best drafts overall in the NFL this year. So there were some others that were really good, like the Vikings. Unfortunately for me, being a Packers fan, but the Vikings draft was very good. But the Browns draft was right up there with it. And I think what they did, well, Andrew Berry and the front office did, was that I think they played the board very well. So, I think he controlled his draft picks, made the moves that he wanted to make along the way. And you still ended up taking, a player in every round other than the seventh round, but you got two number threes and also picked up draft picks next year.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you got the guard from Buffalo in 2019 using some of this year's draft collateral, Wyatt Teller. So, right. Overall, if you took the big picture, I would say from the outside looking in that the front office played this draft very well. And we may even touch on the opposite example, which is what I think happened with my Packers, where the board got away from them, and we'll see the opposite example perhaps. But overall, I think the Browns came out of those 3 days of the draft very well. And I think across the board, Rod, I think from the first round all the way through to the sixth round, I think there's positives all the way through those picks. And you can make a case for, I think, just about all of the picks being at least value for where they were taken, if not a plus value for where they were taken, with possibly one exception, but generally speaking, really good. So I guess if I start at the beginning, Jedrick Wills, first round pick. I think when you looked at those tackles in the first round, if that was the route that you were going to go down and picking round about number 10, you know, where the Browns were picking, there were four guys, I think, that could have gone in that slot. You know, Andrew Thomas, Wills, Tristan Wirfs, and Mekhi Becton.
Right.
And almost whichever one of those four you ended up with, if that was the route that you were going, would have been great value for that pick. You were going to get a really good player if you got one of those four. All very slightly different. You know, Andrew Thomas, out and out left tackle, played his whole career there, started throughout his college career. You know, Tristan Wirfs perhaps moves inside to guard in the NFL. Becton, huge guy, you know, 360, 370, probably closer to 400 pounds if the truth be known.
Yeah.
You know, and then the guy that the Browns ended up with, Jedrick Wills, who I think is an excellent pick. You know, started all those games at Alabama, 29 games at right tackle. And I guess the question that the Browns are going to have is, I'm assuming that they're going to try and move him to left tackle. You know, having picked up,
pretty much come out and said that. Yeah.
And I think, you know, that makes absolutely perfect sense, having picked up Jack Conklin from Tennessee to come in and play at right tackle. So it makes perfect sense. And of course, playing at right tackle for Alabama as he did, you know, he was protecting Tua's blind side anyway, so it's kind of used to doing that. And yes, it will be a change. You know, it will be different. It will take some learning to play on the left side rather than the right side. But for me, he's got all of the traits that you're looking for. The guy can pass protect, which is what you really, you know, we really want a strong pass protector in that left tackle spot. The guy can run block. The guy can move. You know, I think one of the things that you really look for in offensive linemen when you're studying them coming up to the draft is their feet. How quickly they move, how quickly they set, what their base is like when they set. And to me, just an excellent, excellent player. And I think, you know, he's, assuming he can make the move from right tackle to left tackle, and there's no reason to assume that he can't, then that's your next 10-year starter at left tackle for me.
That's what we're hoping. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's always the case that when you've had a great one like Joe Thomas was, the next guy's going to be compared to him, and that's kind of an unfortunate situation. But yeah, I mean, everything says really good pick. It was the number 8 overall player on my board, so getting him at number 10, you know, just shows the value that you got for him there.
Yeah, good value.
So yeah, everything good about that pick. I think Browns fans should be really happy with that.
So when the Browns traded down from 41 to 44, do you think that they had, you think they were in a spot where they were good with several guys making it to 40, you know, that they said, oh, we have several guys that we think that we would be good with? Or do you think they were that confident that Grant Delpit was still going to be there at 44?
I suspect they were pretty confident that he was still going to be there. And they probably took the view that they were probably, I mean, I don't know, Rod, whether they were definitely all in on taking a safety at that position in round two, or whether they had two or three players, if you like, of equal value on their board at that point. Because that, for me, is when you get to the point, I think beyond round one, but also in round one, if you're picking or close to picking and you've got two or three guys and you actually really don't mind which of those two or three that you get, you know, it might be a safety plus a, I don't know, a receiver or a tight end or whatever it might be, who you think are roughly equal value, then you're absolutely in trade down territory anyway. You know, why not, you know, if I don't really mind, in inverted commas, which of those three I get, then why don't I trade down and pick up the extra pick anyway? So I suspect it was probably as much that. But they will have looked at, you know, who was picking at 42 and 43. And said, actually, you know what, they're probably not going to take the guy that we want anyway. For me, again, so I think with Delpa, I think you've got a first-round talent in the second round. I think the only reason that he slipped to the second round was the injury concerns around him. So bad shoulder, ankle injuries in 2019. And his 2019 season wasn't as good on paper, at least, as 2018. And it wasn't as good on film as 2018. So if you look at his tackling in 2019, wasn't quite as good as it was in 2018. But I think you can put most of that down to the injury concerns, you know, shoulder in particular. And I think that if he's medically sound, and you have to believe that the Browns believe that he is, else they wouldn't be taking him there, then I think you've absolutely got a first round player in the second round. Even with the medical concerns, he was number 24 on my board. So he was the second safety on my board behind McKinney, who was number 23 on my board. And I had him slightly ahead of the likes of Winfield and Kyle Duggar and Jeremy Chinn.
Okay.
So for me, again, I think you've got excellent value at that spot. Providing he's medically sound. The guy can do everything from the safety position. So you can play him deep. So you can play him back in zone. You can play him close to the line of scrimmage. You'll come up and play the run. And I think that one thing that in today's NFL, he can cover the third receiver in the slot as well. So he doesn't need to come off the field or have another guy come on the field to cover that slot receiver on third down. He can do that as well. In fact, I think that's one of his biggest strengths. His man coverage, which is unusual for a safety.
Oh yeah,
but I love that. I love the pick. Providing he's medically sound, absolutely love that pick.
Excellent.
So again, I think that, I mean, that has to be an upgrade on Demarius Randall and those guys. So I think that that's definitely a step in the right direction.
Third round's kind of where some Browns fans kind of got lost a little bit. So, what was your thought on the third round?
So this is where it's mixed for me. So Jordan Elliott, I like, and it's not that I dislike Jacob Phillips either, but let's start with the Elliott I like. I think that you've got a guy in Elliott that, is decent against the run, is a good pass rusher, can probably play outside on the edge on passing downs if you wanted to move him out there. I guess the one question mark I think that people may have with Elliott is if you look at his numbers, he doesn't quite have the sack numbers or the tackle numbers that people would look for on paper, but in terms of having the athletic ability and the traits to play defensive tackle in the NFL, I think he's a good pick. He was number 73 on my board. The Browns got him at 88. So again, for me, in terms of value there, you got extra value by getting him. And there was talk, you know, in the days, the 2 or 3 days before the draft, there was talk, and I know it's media talk and you don't know what to believe and what not to believe, that there were teams that were interested in him a lot higher than pick 88.
Interesting. Yeah.
So I would be happy with that, selection. Jacob Phillips. So I had him as a late fourth round pick. So for me, he's about a round too early. But I think we also have to remember that when you get beyond the first, let's say, 50 or so players, you know, just because I've got him ranked as a you know, a late fourth round pick, somebody else will have him ranked as a late third round pick. Somebody else will have him ranked as a late fifth. I think it gets more difficult as you get further down the draft. I think the difficulty for me probably with that pick was the players still left on the board when he was taken. So the likes of Akeem Davis Gaither was still there. I think Malik Harrison was still there when Phillips was taken, and I think that's probably the struggle with that pick.
Yeah, they were both still there. Yep.
Yeah. But yes, it's probably not great value, but at that stage of the draft, it's not bad. You know, you're not taking a guy that's a seventh round pick in the third round, or somebody that most pundits or most analysts have seen as an undrafted free agent in the third round. It's if you keep it in proportion, I think, yeah, it's okay. I mean, I personally would have preferred Harrison or Davis Gaither, but in the grand scheme of things, it's okay.
Yeah. So tell me, Peter, where did you have Zach Bond ranked? And obviously the Browns traded out when he was right there, and that's who the Saints ended up taking. You know, when the Browns traded down and ended up taking Jordan Elliott. So that third round's kind of all kind of tied together. So yeah. The Browns pass on Bond and end up taking Jacob Phillips as a linebacker, and they end up with Jordan Elliott, you know, in that spot. Plus they pick up the third rounder next year. So it's kind of a big mixed bag of pluses and minuses, kind of in the way I'm looking at it.
Yeah, so there were two players in this draft. So every year we get these guys that, for whatever reason, slip down the draft board. So last year it was, I guess, Chekai Polite was the big one, the pass rusher from Florida that slipped out of the first round and all the way down to the third round. And so this year there were two players. One was Josh Jones, the tackle out of Houston, who slipped from around, most people had him first round, I had him first round, slipped into the third round, yeah. And the other one was Zach Bond. So I had, off the top of my head, Zach Bond was about 36 on my draft board.
Okay.
Now you have to believe. So there was a problem with one of his drugs tests at the combine, which came out probably 4 or 5 days before the draft took place.
Okay.
And you have to believe that there was something else that the teams knew that we didn't know, whether there was an injury concern that may yet come out, whether there was something else that may yet come out, because for all of those teams to pass on him when all of the analysts seemingly had him probably as a kind of second round type guy, for him to drop further and further down the board, you have to believe that there was something going on that we don't yet know about. If there wasn't, then, you know, let's put it this way, Rod, I wouldn't have been uncomfortable with my Packers taking him at pick 30.
That's right. You
know, it's a little bit higher than I would have wanted, and certainly if Bond had been there at pick 62 with the Packers picked in the second round, and he was there, but the Packers chose to go in a different direction. But if they'd chosen him there, I would have been over the moon. So I certainly would have expected him to have gone earlier.
So you understand how all the Browns fans felt when that trade came through. That's the guy they wanted. That's the guy, you know, like, oh, I hope he gets to that pick so the Browns can take him. And then they trade out. That's like, oh, why'd we do that? But then we hear that we get a third rounder next season, which is a heck of a deal. But you got to see what that third rounder turns into.
Yeah.
Also. Yeah. So, Jordan Elliott should be a nice player.
Oh, I think Elliott will be a very nice player. The other thing with Bond, and this, I've not heard this or seen this anywhere, but it may be a question as to teams weren't comfortable with where they saw him playing in the NFL. So he played exclusively on the edge for the Badgers. So it was a pass rushing end, could drop into coverage and was pretty good in coverage, but played his whole career on the edge for the Badgers. And yet most people saw him as an off the ball, probably weak side linebacker in the NFL, a 4-3 weak side linebacker in the NFL. And it may have been that teams were not quite sure what he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's one of those things that we'll just have to wait to see how that pans out. I mean, had he ended up playing as that 4-3 weak side linebacker, that would be a new position for him to have to learn. So I think to expect him, having played his whole career rushing off the edge for Wisconsin, to come in and immediately be a star, there'd be a big question mark about that happening. It's not to say that he wouldn't be that player, but you know, you have to be careful about projecting that position change.
Right. Well, tell me this, Peter. I guess when you're talking in the third round, you're really not talking about taking so much of a chance. I don't really see the Saints as taking a big risk on Zach Bond, but they did give up quite a bit in giving up that third rounder next season for him too.
Yep.
The Saints are a good team, and they kind of put up, you know, a lot where other teams weren't willing to take a shot on this guy any sooner. And then I see the Kansas City Chiefs taking William Gay in the second round, which I think, you know, that was earlier than, you know, I think a few people thought he would go, not because of his talent, but because of,
character.
Character.
Yep.
What's your thoughts on good teams taking gambles on guys like this? You think it's and they're two totally different guys. I'm not trying to compare Bond and Gay.
Yeah.
You think this is typical of what we've seen historically, or do you think isn't it normally teams that aren't as good that feel like they need to take a gamble on a guy and try to strike it rich, you know? That's something that's kind of been eating at me a little bit. Kansas City took Gay, I thought, wow, I guess they can afford to take a gamble on him, but do they really need to do that? They're so good already. Why not just take a really good player that's a little safer in the second round?
Yeah, I mean, I guess part of it is you're looking at position value. So I think that teams would be prepared to take more of a chance on. So if you look at Willie Gay Jr., I think teams are probably more prepared to take a chance on a edge pass rusher than they are a guy that's an off the ball linebacker, if you will, because of the perceived impact that player can have on a game and on a season. So I think teams are always, you know, they're always looking for, obviously, the next quarterback. They're looking for their next offensive tackles. They're looking for their next pass rusher. And I think that teams are more prepared to take chances on getting those guys than probably they are with, an off-the-ball linebacker or say, an interior offensive lineman. I think the view is probably in today's game that you can hide an inside linebacker more than you can hide other positions.
Right.
Particularly as they may not be on the field for three downs.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know that I totally agree with that, but I understand the thinking. Uh-huh. And that's why you see not many interior offensive linemen and not many centers and guards and not many inside linebackers going in the first round. And the same happens with the safety position as well. And that's because I think teams think that in lots of cases, I can take a corner and convert him to safety. I'm very rarely going to take a safety and convert him to corner.
So I think it's
more of a positional thing. And then I think that, and people will probably hate me to say this, but I think there's so much luck involved in the draft that I think it's a bit of a chicken and egg, Rods, because I think we go back and look on it in 3 or 4 years' time and we say, well, yeah, I can't understand why they took this guy over that guy. Look how this guy has turned out. But at the time they were taking him, they didn't know that was the way that he was going to turn out. And you're right about the good teams tend to get the right guys or get them at the right value. But again, I think that's a chicken and egg thing. I think they become good because they do that. And then over time they become bad because they don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think time will tell with Zach Bond. I think time will tell with the Saints move. I think so many of these guys don't work out, and I think as fans we tend to look at it and we think that we've got our 7 draft picks, or maybe we've traded and got a couple more and we've got 9 draft, and they're all going to fill these holes all over the team, and that doesn't happen,
right?
you hear it all the time. You know, well, I expect that guy that I'm going to take in the 6th round is going to be the next Lawrence Taylor or whatever. But that's generally not the way it goes. If you get one in the 6th round, you know, it may be because you've drafted really well, or it may be just you got really lucky. And it's probably as much the latter as the former.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you liked somebody that well, you probably weren't going to wait till the 6th round to take them.
Yep. Absolutely. I think picking up the extra 3rd round pick, I think it gives you so much flexibility. I love having those extra picks early, and we all do, because obviously you've got the chance to get an extra player. But I think it gives you the opportunity then to move around the board a lot more and take control of your own board.
The Browns are up to 10 picks. picks. They have an extra 3rd, 4th, and 5th.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't see them making 10 picks. I think they'll be moving a lot next season.
You need that draft collateral, particularly, you know, if it may be that you're in round one, and hopefully for the Browns fans, you're picking somewhere towards the end of round one next year.
A little closer, yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
But you know, then you might see a player, say you're picking up, let's just say at 30, and the player that you really want, you think is going to be around 20. Well, you probably got to give up a 3rd round or even a 2nd rounder to get from 30 to 20. And that's where that draft collateral becomes so important.
30, Peter, this is a Browns podcast, not a Packers podcast. I don't think we've ever picked at 30. We appreciate the sentiment, though, definitely.
Well, you never know. And I think the thing is, in the NFL today, I think that the opportunity to turn it around more quickly is there. And I think what you really want, though, is to be able to sustain that turnaround, because I think that, you know, teams are capable of going from, let's say, 8 wins to 12 wins or 13 wins in one season. But can they then continue at 12 or 13 wins for 4 or 5 seasons? And I think that's really difficult.
Yeah. So you really liked Harrison Bryant. You really liked that pick, right?
Yeah. And I think that having already picked up, so you've got Njoku and picking up Austin Hooper from Atlanta, right? Already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think you've got a completely different player with Harrison Bryant. So Hooper's going to catch you a lot of balls in the kind of short areas, the 10, you know, 5, 10, 15 yard area. And he'll get open and catch you a lot of balls in that area. What Bryant will give you is the opportunity to stretch the field. Great hands, probably the best all out receiving tight end in this draft. Great hands, will stretch the field, will get open down the field. I don't think he gives you a lot as a blocking tight end right now. And whether he ever will, I don't know. But in terms of a pure receiving tight end, a guy that's, at least in terms of potential, a guy that could give you 50 receptions from the tight end position easily in a season, he can give you that. The only question is going to be, he's going to be competing for the football with Hooper, with OBJ, with Landry, whatever. There aren't enough balls to go around.
Yeah. That's going to be the interesting thing, the distribution. A lot of guys worthy of getting targets, but there's only going to be so many going around, especially when the Browns should be running the ball an awful lot this season.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, definitely an offensive weapon. I guess your question mark, and probably along with the blocking, the reason he drops to the fourth round is, you know, he's coming from a relatively small school, certainly football wise. But again, you know, you have to say to yourself, is this the guy that I want to be? Am I expecting him to come in and catch 60 balls in 2020? And the answer's no, right? If he gives you that, that's fantastic. But you've got to be looking at this guy as saying, as you know, if he catches 30 balls this year and 40 balls next year and 50 balls the year after that, you know, you're looking for that gradual development of this type of player. And at this stage in the draft, fourth round, it was number 102 on my board, and you got him at 115. So again, you know, plus value on that pick. Nothing to complain about there at all.
Just your thoughts quickly on Nick Harris. You think he's the heir apparent at center? A lot of people really like him too.
Yeah. So I like him. I think it's very difficult this year, and it happens in a lot of years, but particularly this year, it's very difficult when you look to the top 4 or 5 centers on the board. There probably wasn't much to choose between them. All of them could play center and guard. You know, Harris was a long time starter at center and at guard for Washington. Good in pass protection. He's kind of a tough mauler, brawler type that you see quite a lot of in that kind of interior offensive line positions. There wasn't anything for me, Rod, that jumped out at me that said, "Oh, this guy ought to be going a lot higher." But there was lots of solid stuff, and you know, I thought that he was probably late third, early fourth round pick. Yeah, and you got him in the fifth, round. So I think you've got again plus value. I was surprised he dropped down that far. So yeah, I think when I look at the center position and guard, right guard in particular, I think that you get a lot of those guys in the third, fourth, fifth round who turn out to be long time starters in the NFL. That's where they tend to get picked. You know, there aren't too many of those interior linemen like Quentin Nelson that's a all out first round pick, top 10 overall pick. They all tend to come in the third, fourth, or fifth round. So yeah, I think it's a really, really solid pick at that point. I think as we've gone through this, I can generally see there's not a lot to complain about with this draft. You know, it's the odd thing here. Yeah, we could have got that guy. Perhaps we could have got that guy. But generally speaking, this is
a lot of smart value picks, right?
I think so. And I think, as I said right at the start, I think they played the board very well in terms of moving around the board, trading, picking up extra picks, picking up extra players. I think they played the board very, very well. So I think there's lots of pluses in terms of the way that the general manager played this draft. Now, we won't know, obviously, for 2-3 years how it actually turns out in reality. But certainly in terms of, you know, for me, he gets an A+ for the way that he managed the draft board. Absolutely.
Yeah, we're going to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Skippin' Stones. You can find them at Etsy.com. Just search for Skippin' Stones, the store, SKIPPINSTONEZ. You can find handmade stone, shell, and sea glass jewelry, pebble art, and frame poetry, and their new yoga bracelets out. And check back frequently because there's always new stuff showing up. Also, you can enjoy free shipping until Mother's Day. So you only got a few days left on that, so definitely check that out. You can follow Skippin' Stones on Twitter at Skippin' Stones, and now we're going to get back to the action.
Yeah, something that's very interesting to me is you know, the sixth round pick, Peoples Jones. He's a heck of an athlete. People say he didn't, you know, put up the numbers and everything that would have been expected, and, you know, it could be the system that he played in and all that. So anyway, so the Browns have this guy who could turn into this great player, or, you know, or maybe he's just, maybe he won't. Okay. He's a sixth round pick, which makes a lot of sense. You take a gamble on a guy here.
Yep.
But we look at the Browns system that they're running. They're going to run the ball a lot with the two backs they have. They've got three talented tight ends. Their wide receiver room already has OBJ and Jarvis Landry, and Higgins is back now. So those guys are going to be your top three. And then you've got Kadarrell Hodge, who's great on special teams and looked pretty good catching the ball. Damian Ratley, who seemed to be developing. JoJo Natson, who's going to be the return man. I don't see how he doesn't make the team, whether they count him as a receiver or not. But you're already up to, six receivers there. And I'm not saying that Hodge or Ratley necessarily make the team automatically. But Peoples Jones has to make the team. But how much playing time is this guy going to get, and how many targets is he going to get, and how long is it going to take to know if this guy is developing or not?
Yeah, I think it's difficult. I mean, I look at this pick, and it feels like one of those picks where, and I think this probably happens a fair amount towards the end of the draft, is there's a guy, regardless of a position, and you know, there's a school of thought that teams should be doing this throughout the draft. But the reality is you have to mix best player available with your need as well. But I think when you get towards the end of the draft, if you get a guy who really, certainly in my view, should have been going at the end of the third round, early fourth round, and is still there in the sixth round, regardless of the position, it's pretty difficult to turn that guy down. You know, you're not going to take another, let's say, another kicker or another punter or whatever if you're secure at those positions. But I think a skill position, I think it's difficult to turn down a guy who really should have been going at least two rounds earlier than he went. You know, and for me, he's only dropped that far because of the depth of the wide receiver position. And there's no doubt that, you know, the wide receiver position was deeper this year, was better at the top, but was also deeper this year than it's been for quite a number of years. The only proviso on that is that next year's class looks just as good, by the way. So we're going to get another deep. We're going to get another strong wide receiver class next year. But I think that. So I think what he gives you is, yes, a lot of potential. Yes, his productivity wasn't huge. Excellent punt returner, by the way. Excellent punt returner. So I think he gives, you know, he's going to be competing, I guess, for that number five or number six receiver slot on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ultimately, you just never know how these things are going to pan out. You know, you may get to training camp and one of your top guys, heaven forbid, goes down injured, and all of a sudden the group looks different.
Well, that's true, and that happens. I mean, the Browns have a couple other guys on the roster, which are not too bad. Also, that I didn't even name. So I think, I think the competition is going to be tough.
You know, and the other way of looking at that is that, you know, you may get to, let's assume the preseason and everything starts on time. You may get to the final cut down, you know, at the beginning of September, and then maybe teams desperate for a wide receiver at that point. You know, they've lost their starter, or they've lost two guys with injury or whatever else. And all of a sudden, if you're six or seven or eight deep at that position, then you've got the opportunity to move on one of these guys for a fifth round pick, or even if you just get your sixth round pick back again for next year. You know, at the very least, you'll be looking to get, you know, collateral for next year's draft as well. So I think at this stage of the draft, you're taking the best player available and a guy with, in my view, a guy with a lot of potential who should have gone two rounds earlier.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch that and see how it plays out, definitely. So, Peter, we lost Don Shula a day or two ago, I think.
Yesterday.
Great. Great coach. I'll leave that to other people as to whether he's the greatest or not. Still has the most wins, I believe.
Yep.
Our head coach lived to be 90 years old. Really got his start in Cleveland. He was went to college in Cleveland. John Carroll. Played for the Browns for two seasons, 51 and 52, and then he moved on, played for, two other teams, I believe. Actually had a pretty decent NFL career, 21 interceptions. And Jeff brought this up on the podcast maybe a month ago when he quizzed me, and he talked about Don Shula, and Don Shula played 73 games, 21 interceptions. I mean, that's pretty impressive. So, 328 wins. So I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on Don Shula.
Yeah, it's obviously, you know, a sad day, particularly when it's one of the guys that you grow up with, you know, in terms of, you know, one of those great coaches and one of those football figures that's always been there, you know, whether it's Don Shula or even, you know, a Tom Landry or those kind of figures, even if it's not your team or not in any way related to your team, it's just one of those guys that the name just means something, you know, and in terms of, you know, his overall standing amongst all-time NFL coaches, he's right up there, you know, and And you can make cases for George Halas or Vince Lombardi or Paul Brown, but Don Shula's in that group. Yeah, whatever order you want to put those guys in, he's in that group. And, you know, most of us remember, you know, the teams that he built in Miami. Obviously, you know, the perfect season in 72 and winning the Super Bowl again in 73. But people tend to forget how great a coach he was before he went to Miami, you know, with the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what's interesting for me is that he kind of had different, was able to build different types of teams. You know, so with the Colts, he had a team with, you know, for me, the ultimate quarterback, Johnny Unitas, Raymond Berry, John Mackey, a great Colts team that were able to, you know, yes, they were able to run the ball, you know, with Lenny Moore and Alan Ameche and those guys. But, you know, you looked at that Colts team with Johnny U, and you looked at it as a passing team. And then we got to Miami, he then built that strong, you know, that strong running team, you know, that won those Super Bowls and went to three Super Bowls in a row. But, you know, the Larry Zonkers and the Mercury Morris and Jim Kick and those guys. And, you know, you can still see Kuchenberg out there, you know, blocking in front of those guys. And it was just, you know, a run first, if you like. And Bob Greasy is kind of the general at quarterback who didn't have to throw the ball very much, you know, did enough, managed the game, but you know, it's all built around the run. So we had a style there in Miami, if you like, in the early to mid 70s. And then of course you have Marino in the 80s, completely different style. You know, with Marino,
so.
it was you know, it was turn it loose. You know, it was throw deep. It was, you know, we're going to run those two nine patterns with Mark Duper and Mark Clayton going deep. And, you know, we were going to throw 48 touchdowns in a season in 1983 that was unheard of, you know, back in those days. So you had these completely different styles of teams that that Don Shula built, which is, I think, is unusual. You know, I think that coaches tend to have a pattern, you know, wherever they go, whatever teams they coach, they tend to have a pattern of the types of types of players that they have. And I think with Shula, it was different everywhere he was. So, yeah, I think that absolutely right up there in the upper echelons of those of the coaching pantheon with the names that we've mentioned. And I think it's just a sad day. You know, he's had a good life, I'm sure.
But
it's always sad when one of those guys, like I say, moves on. The guys that you kind of personify the game, you know, regardless of which team you follow, they kind of just personify the NFL, and they've always been there, you know. It's a sad day, but lots to, I guess it prompts you to look back and just think about all of those great players and those great teams that they had. And, you know, he certainly had the ability to build a camaraderie in the teams that he had. And it's difficult to know whether, you know, that camaraderie breeds the winning or the winning breeds that camaraderie, but they certainly had it. That Dolphins team certainly had it. And, yeah, it's just a sad day. But also, I think, Rod, I think when somebody's lived what appears to be a really good life, a very productive life, it's also a time to kind of celebrate all of the achievements that he had.
Yeah, I would agree with you on the celebration part. Yeah, definitely. I just always thought Don Shula just always came across as such a kind of a classy guy that kind of just drew such respect. And he was always a coach from the time I started following football.
Yeah.
So He just kind of always struck me as the kind of guy of how could anybody not like this guy? How could anybody, you know, kind of root against this guy or anything? You know, and I wasn't always, you know, I wasn't necessarily a Dolphins fan or anything, but I just always respected and always just, you know, really kind of looked up to Don Shula.
No, absolutely. And you know, and the, you're right. He's certainly the way that he came across. Difficult not to root for him. And it's interesting, again, as you look at, you know, the success that he had. And I think you get this with all of the greats when you go and look back on their careers. There's also a lot of what if moments, you know, where that team won 2 Super Bowls. They could have won 3 Super Bowls. They should have gone to another Super Bowl. So it's, just a great career and somebody that I think just for football people will be sorely missed as somebody that was always there, you know, always part of your football life.
Yeah, I would agree. So, Peter, I wanted to talk a little bit about the, not so much just the Packers, but kind of draw a comparison here between, and I don't want to focus too much on what the Packers did because I think you're probably tired of talking about the Jordan Love draft pick. It's probably been driving you away from Twitter and everything else. So, but the Packers drafted Jordan Love with Aaron Rodgers still, I think, in our opinions, probably still very much in his prime. Even though he's getting up there a little bit, but he seems to me to be a guy who's fully capable of playing several more seasons. And at the same time, the Browns have Baker Mayfield coming into his third season.
Yep.
And they signed Case Keenum, bring him in, a veteran, on a 3-year deal. How old's Aaron Rodgers?
36. I'm trying to remember.
He's 36.
Yeah, and getting on for 37.
Okay, Case Keenum's 32 years old. Case Keenum's coming in as the backup. Signed a 3-year deal, I think like $9 million. Decent deal for him. Good deal for the Browns, I think, really. But it seems like the Browns' quarterback situation is very well defined as to what's happening. Now, there will be the people who will say, oh, Case Keenum's there in case Baker falters and Case Keenum's going to take over. I don't think that was the thought whatsoever when he was signed. I think they wanted a good backup there, you know, in case something happens to Baker. And it helps to have good players on your team, too.
Yeah.
So it was just a smart signing. Things seem to... I don't want to say they're not well defined in Green Bay because it's not like Jordan Love is going to take the starting job for Aaron Rodgers, but the future seems kind of off a little bit. And it just seems kind of strange to see uncertainty in the quarterback situation in Green Bay. Now, you know, and things seem to be a little bit more set in Cleveland.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, two very, very contrasting situations. I mean, I think, you know, from the outside looking in, obviously I don't follow the Browns as closely as you do, Rod, or your friends or the listeners do. But I think from the outside looking in, you know, you're getting a Case Keenum to come in and run the team and manage a few games for you if Baker Mayfield were to go down injured. Mm-hmm. Right. So you're looking for that guy. You're not bringing him in. Realistically, I mean, I think you've got bigger problems if you're expecting Case Keenum to come in and somehow compete for the starting job with Baker Mayfield. Because I think you have to be, when you've taken a guy number one in it, going into his third year, you have to be all in on that guy, unless he's been absolutely horrendous, which he hasn't been. And I know he's had his moments, particularly in this past season, but he hasn't been. You have to be all in on that guy. And I don't think there's any reason not to be all in on him. and I know that we've touched on this parallel probably 6 months or 9 months ago, Rod, when we talked about the Baker Mayfield Brett Favre parallel.
Mm-hmm.
So Favre was good in his first year in Green Bay. His second year was a really down year, bounced back, and I think that's hopefully, you know, what where Baker's going to be. But yeah, Keenum to me is a guy that will come in and manage the game for you to get you through four or five games. So you don't want to be in this position where, you know, you're say, I don't know, you're just above 500. So say you're 6-4 through 10 games, or you're 7-5 through 12 games. You're right on the edge of that playoff position.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden your quarterback goes down and you're scrambling around to find a guy that's got a level of starting experience that can come in and get you through three or four or five games. Because that's what you're looking for in that backup guy. And that's the guy that I believe that you've got in Case Keenum. And, you know, and there'll be some that say, well, you did X in Minnesota and what have you. Yeah, you did, but those are exceptions. You know, if he was the next whoever, he'd be a starting quarterback in this league and would have been, you know, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So he is who he is. You know, this will be his ninth season, I think, in the NFL. So if he's not a full-time starter by his ninth year, it's kind of set on the type of career that he's probably having. But as a guy to come in and manage the game for you in three, four or five games, if Baker were, heaven forbid, to go down injured, exactly the type of guy that you want. And also, in fairness, a guy that's used to playing that role as well. So yes, he's had, you know, the odd year where he's been the main guy, touched on the Minnesota year, but generally speaking, you know, for most of his career up until that year in Minnesota and the year that he had in Denver, in every other year, he's been a guy that started just a few games here and there. So he's a guy that you kind of knows what his role is. And I think that's important to have in your backup quarterback.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you know, a guy like Cam Newton who's sitting out there, I don't know if anybody really knows how effective he's going to be yet, you know, when he signs someplace and what kind of opportunity he's going to get. But he's been a starter his whole career. So to bring him in to be a backup, you make a great point. It's a different role.
It's a completely different role, and you just create problems for yourselves. You know, either the expectation is that barring an unforeseen circumstance, that Baker's your man for the next five to however many years. If that's not the expectation, then you're probably backing the wrong guy anyway. So you've got to be all in on that guy, and therefore to bring in, you know, say a Cam Newton, who's a career starter, or even a Jameis Winston, mm-hmm. Who, you know, is a young guy, would expect to be a starter in the NFL. And I know he's gone to the Saints, but it's a completely different situation over there.
Yeah.
You know, to bring that guy in, or as I say, Cam Newton in, I just think you're causing problems for yourself, because the moment Baker throws an interception or has a bad game or whatever, the boo birds come out, and we're calling for the next guy to come in, and that helps nobody. You know that.
Yeah.
I don't know who said it, and you hear it spouted a bit, but you know, if you've got two quarterbacks, you've got no quarterback, and I believe that there's a lot of truth in that.
That's right, and we've been there as Browns fans, as a team, or we've also been where if you have no quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. So, pretty much the same thing. But yeah, you know, I think Baker just needs his shot, and he needs the consistency of a coaching staff to be here and to know that he's not going to have a different offensive coordinator after six or eight games. He's not going to have a different head coach going into next season and everything else. So hopefully they can give him some consistency and we can really see him grow over these next couple seasons. So I'm excited about it for him.
Yeah, and as you said, you know, the contrast that between that and the position in Green Bay is it's completely 180 degree difference. Yeah, and for me, just very quickly, I have no problem with the Packers taking Jordan Love. If they believe, if the front office believe that that's the guy for the next 10 or 12 years or 15 years, if you're lucky, I very much take the view when it's at that position, when you've got a 36/37-year-old quarterback, if you believe that that's your guy for the next decade, then I don't think you have a choice but to take him, because those guys come along so infrequently. Mm-hmm. And the worst that can happen is in 2 or 3 years' time is you find actually he hasn't developed as well as we thought it was going to be, or he hasn't turned out to be the player they thought it was going to be. Well, they're going to offload him anyway. They probably won't get the first round pick back, but heck, first round picks get wasted every other year as it is. So it's not the end of the world. You know, the bigger questions are what it does to the psyche of Aaron Rodgers, but who knows? who really knows? The way that the media report stuff and Twitter report stuff and what have you, I don't think necessarily pays a lot of. It's not real. Let's put it like that. Only Aaron Rodgers mm-hmm. knows how he's gonna deal with it. And I have to say that the whole reception is very mixed, but the view on Aaron Rodgers as a Packers community, if you like, is very mixed before that happened anyway. You know, it's he's been a very, very great quarterback, will be a Hall of Famer, will be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. But 2020 Aaron Rodgers isn't 2010 Aaron Rodgers. He isn't the quarterback that led you to the Super Bowl in 2010. It's a decade ago. And he isn't that same player. The difficulty I think we all have with players who have peaked and are somewhere on the other side of that peak is we don't know how far down that slope they are. And I think in Aaron Rodgers' case, it's not that far down that slope. But you also don't know how quickly he's going to drop off that slope. So, nobody really knows. And I don't subscribe to the it's sending this message or it's sending that message. I don't subscribe to any of that. I don't believe that in any shape or form. I think that the Packers front office just took the view that at some point they have to make a change. Don't know when that's going to be, 2 or 3 years' time, whenever that is. And if the guy they think could be that guy was sitting there, I don't think they felt they had a choice but to take him.
I just think it has become such a big story that the Packers have never, they haven't drafted a receiver, really any offensive weapons to help him in so long. You probably know who the receiver was that was sitting there that they could have taken in place of Jordan Love.
So I think the issue they had, Rod. So I think that, and I talked about this between day one and day two of the draft, was that for me, I would have been giving up next year's first rounder to get back into the second round this year, mm-hmm. to get one of those receivers. So from the Packers draft management point of view, if you will, the draft board, in complete contrast to Andrew Berry and the Browns, the Packers draft board just got away from them completely. They should have been using next year's collateral, in my view, to get a wide receiver, having given up the fourth round pick to move up four places to get Jordan Love. They ended up taking players around higher than they should have done. So they took a tight end, stroke H back in the third round, who really was a fifth round pick, but they weren't certainly would be there in the fifth round because they'd given away their fourth round pick. So it all completely got away from them in my view. There's a lot of talk about the wide receiver stuff in Green Bay, and it's a difficult one because the fact is they haven't taken one in the first they haven't taken a wide receiver in the first round since I want to say Javon Walker, and that's about 2003.
Okay.
So it's a long, long time.
Uh-huh.
But what I will also say to that, there's some counters to that in the New England, when they took in Kiel Harry last year, was the first wide receiver they'd taken in the first round since 1996. The other thing that the Packers have had a lot of success with second round guys. So they've taken a lot of receivers in the second round, Davante Adams, Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, the list goes on. Greg Jennings, the list goes on. So they've had lots of success with those guys.
Okay.
I think the other problem that they've had, without turning this into a Packers podcast, is that they've had so many problems on defense that they ended up drafting defense every year because the defense was so bad.
Yeah, they've been doing that for a while. Yeah.
So. But yeah, it will be interesting to see how that whole thing plays out. And as you can imagine, there's lots of narratives out there, and I think it's time that all Packers people and non-Packers media people moved on from that story, and the season will play out how it plays out, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, just from a Browns fans standpoint, and I'm going back to when you and I had the discussion of would you trade and I think this was going into Baker's second season before the season even started, and he had set the rookie touchdown record. Would you trade an aging Aaron Rodgers on his salary for Baker, and his rookie deal, and there was a lot of thought there as to, whether you would or not. And it almost feels like the Packers are just about ready to do that with Jordan Love in the next few years. And even from the outside, as Browns fans, we're wanting our quarterback to get to the point where he is ready to take us to a championship. And in Green Bay, you have a quarterback who's capable of doing that.
Yeah.
And it's like, get the man another weapon. Even from the outside, you drafted a backup quarterback. Get the guy the best receiver you can. That's just kind of my thought.
I understand. I absolutely understand that. I think a lot of it depends on where you stand on Aaron Rodgers, and then that kind of guides you into what you think is the right thing to do. And I have to say, like you guys will know, with the Browns fan base, and that the Packers fan base is kind of split all over the place in terms of Aaron Rodgers. And I guess because of the symmetry that there is between this situation and the situation when Favre was the same age and they drafted Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
There's that symmetry there, and I don't know.
If you guys go to a third quarterback that's just as good as the last two, a lot of people, I don't know. I mean, there's just something in the water in Green Bay.
Yeah, well, I think it's making up for all those years when before Favre got there and they didn't have a quarterback. It was bad, but. But you're right. You've got two completely contrasting situations between Cleveland and the Packers. And, I think all around the league this coming season, hopefully we'll have a season. You've got lots of interesting quarterback situations, with Brady moving and Phillip Rivers moving and Drew Brees right near the end of his career, probably. I think the whole situation of quarterbacks is probably going to make the 2020 season. Very, very interesting.
We've been going for a while, Peter. I want to get your thoughts on one more thing before we wrap up. A statement by OBJ. He's coming back from his core injuries and saying he's hitting the reset button. And I have this quote from him. Tell me if you think this is a positive quote for he and the football team or not. This is going to be one of my best seasons. Do you see that as positive or not?
So if it were me, I'd be taking that as a positive.
Okay.
And part of that would be, and again, you know, I'm not obviously as close to this situation as you are, Rod, and the Browns fans listening. So this is kind of an outside view looking in, and part of it is kind of a negative positive, if you will, and that's you know, the statement was very clear about this is going to be, you know, one of my best seasons. It's not, there's nothing negative in that statement. It's not, mm-hmm. Well, it would be a great season if, but this hasn't happened, or that's not going to happen, or I could be better, or this could be better, or it's, I just think I would take that to me as a positive statement. I would take it at face value.
That's fair enough. And I, honestly, if anybody else said that, I would just take it as a positive. My only concern is if he's thinking that he's going to set personal highs for catches and yardage and touchdown receptions, this uh-huh. may not be the offense in which that's going to happen. And if that's going to be an issue for him this year, then that may not be a good sign. You know, as long as it's done within the context of the yep. team first, great. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question is, and I think this is a question that we could ask about lots of very talented players. It's obviously different for each lots of different players because they have different personality and stuff. But for lots of talented players, it's do their numbers, does their performance matter more than the team winning? And I don't know the answer to that question.
We know what the answer should be.
Yes, we know what the answer should be. But it may change for people as well as they go through their careers as well. Mm-hmm. So it could be that when you're younger, you're more interested, unfortunately, in putting up the numbers and raising your own profile and that kind of thing. Because, well, I've always got years to win championships. That can come later. But, you know, and then as you get older, those championships become more important because you haven't got many years left. I don't know. You know, it's always that difficult question when you get a super talented player who very often come along with, let's just say a level of confidence that they have to have. That's part of the makeup that makes them the super talented player that they are, good, bad, or indifferent. I guess it comes with those challenges. But as I say, for me, from the outside looking in, because I don't think there's anything negative to read into what's a positive statement, I would personally be taking that as, yeah, fantastic. What else do I really want him to be saying at this stage? In fact, the less he's saying at this stage, the better, probably.
Well, that's true. And the statement probably means that he's working really hard. So yeah, that's good. I just thought it was interesting. And I was just wondering if anybody else was reading anything else into that statement.
I think the only thing we're reading about OBJ is how he's being traded every other day to every other team in the league. Is what we
yeah. That seems to have died down a little bit since the draft, but yeah. Well, Peter, it's been great talking to you and catching up. Let's throw your Twitter handle out there once again.
Yeah, it's at the underscore IT underscore hedgehog. And yeah, I, you know, certainly love to kind of catch up with any football fans out there. Love to talk football, whether that's Browns, whether that's Packers, whether that's the draft, whether that's whatever it might be. You know, how much I love the history of the NFL and stuff, Rod. So anything, certainly would love to catch up with people.
All right. That's going to do it. We're going to wrap things up here. We appreciate everybody listening. This has been the Browns Blitz, and we will catch you next time.